Welcome to The Romance Show. I'm your host, Vanessa Fewings, author of The Enthrall Sessions and The Icon Trilogy from Harlequin. I also have a new romance novel coming out at the end of November called Perfume Girl. I'm proud to be a member of Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. My next guest is J.R. Ward. With 15 million copies of her novels in print worldwide and published in over 26 countries around the world, she's one of the most beloved authors of the romance community and for readers everywhere. She's famous for her Fallen Angels series, her Black Dagger Brotherhood novels, of which there are 17 in the series so far, and there's more on the way, and fans are always happy to know that. She's also written The Bourbon Kings, an amazing series set in Kentucky, and I'm obsessed with these books and I cannot wait to talk to her about them. Her latest novel is called Consumed, with a backdrop of firefighters and fire investigators. It's already receiving rave reviews. J.R. Ward's characters will capture your imagination. You're going to fall into one of her books and you're not going to want to leave. If by any chance you can put it down, those characters are going to stay with you long after the novel is finished. She writes the ultimate alphas and strong heroic women that we can all relate to. Welcome to The Romance Show, J.R. Ward.
Thank you for having me. I'm very, very grateful.
I'm so excited to have you here. I want to say, first of all, that I have become addicted to your Bourbon King series. I just can't put them down. And I want to know, what was your inspiration for the Easterly Estate?
Well, my husband is a sixth generation Louisvillian. And when he and I met and fell in love up in Boston, which is where I'm from, yes, he always intended to come back down here because that was where his family was. And because I just love him and can't imagine life without him, I said, all right, I'll move to Kentucky. It became amply clear that this expat Yankee was a little bit hardwired a little bit differently than the Southern contingency. But I'm happy to say 15 years on, I'm assimilated down here. And part of the way I got assimilated was I'm a big fan of old houses. Yes, courtesy of my husband and his connections, I've had the good fortune to go into many old Kentucky estates. And some of them overlook the Ohio River. And the inspiration for the Bourbon Kings was partially being down here in Kentucky. And the people that I've met and I've known, although nothing is based on any of them specifically, but also my love for Dynasty, the old television show.
I love that.
So it was sort of, I wanted to be Alexis Carrington Colby when I grew up. I just thought she was wonderful. So really the series came about, as a nexus between my loving, being here in Louisville and in Kentucky and my fond memories of watching Dynasty and just loving the intrigue and the family saga and the drama. And the way it works for me as a writer is I have pictures in my head and, you know, easily 5 years before I started working on it officially, after I sold it to my publisher, I started to have these visions of these people and of Easterly and the way they were living. So I always do. I listened to my Rice Krispies and that was how the series came about.
That's incredible, because I think that what really shows your talent is you've got these characters, and there's a lot of characters, but they're balanced perfectly throughout the book. The first book I'm reading, The Bourbon Kings. And it's the fact that this, some of them are just so lovable. Like, I have to tell you, I'm head over heels in love with the relationship between Miss Aurora and Tulane. Or Lane,
I know.
Oh my God.
I know.
That warms me so deeply. I can't even tell you. Now, I love the relationship between Lizzie and Tulane, but that one is just pretty special. And how did that come about? I mean, it's the fact for me that there's these boys in this big old house, and she's the warmth, she's the love, she's, you know, what everyone is drawn to, that the people with the good spirits are drawn to her.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When we moved into, so we live in this old haunted pile of stone, and we bought the house about 2 months before my daughter was born, because absolutely, by all means, move into an old haunted house 2 months before you bring your baby home. That was really great planning. But I'll never forget, we moved into the house, and the neighbors, in a very southern way, threw a welcoming party for my husband and I. And there was a gentleman who was 92 at the time, who lived in the estate behind ours. And the estate had run down. He lived there alone, in rather sort of, you know, sort of sad circumstances in some ways, but came from, you know, his descendancy was from a very prominent family here in town. And he asked me about when our daughter was coming. And I told him and how excited we were and all this stuff. And he looked at me, and I'll never forget it. He said, "Just remember, the children of privilege are often the most neglected." And it really chilled me to the bone, because in a materialistic society where everyone competes about, you know, what kind of car they have or where they go or what schools they go to or vacation, you know, those who are part of that echelon, you know, sometimes miss out on the true family ties that bind. And although I don't think anything up, I just go with the pictures in my head. That statement by him, which seemed a personal reflection at the time, I formed the relationship between Aurora and Tulane.
Yeah. And Lane is so lovable. Like, you just want to hang out with him. Like, he's almost
bad, yeah,
but he's really the hero.
Yeah.
Too much, but I just, you know, I'm just head over heels in love with him. And you know, it's real talent too. I want to say, being able to balance all those characters and have them all so different. When you were writing that first book, did it just unravel as you went along? I know you plot a little bit, but did it just kind of take off and have its own life, like the house itself?
Well, yeah, no. So that is exactly the way the writing is for me. Whether we're talking about, you know, the Blackdagger Brotherhood books and the Brotherhood and their females and the war with the Lessing Society, or the Bourbon Kings, or Consumed and the first responders that I'm writing about. The challenge for me, because there's so much going on in these bandwidths in my brain, is to figure out how to balance properly all the different images and sound clips and video clips that kind of play on the screen of my mind. And I think that's the tricky part, because the visions that I get when I'm writing a book don't always come in chronological order. So my job, I've always felt, is to describe what I'm shown in such a fashion that when someone reads the book, that they can approximate what I'm seeing in my head, number one. And number two, balancing the emotional highs and lows of each plot line is really important, because you don't want to have everyone being like screaming drama, because that's a one note that doesn't resonate. And you don't want everything to be super quiet, because I don't tend to write books that are like that. So you want to vary, you want to, you know, high drama and then low drama and then humor and then pathos and all this stuff. And it's that roller coaster ride of emotions that I think really evokes a response in the reader, yeah. You know, provided the characters are accessible and likable and all that stuff.
Yeah. And it is a balancing act, and you do it so well. Like, I'm in awe of your talent. I want to say what I really thought was wonderful was the first book in the Black Dagger Brotherhood series is you wrote it for yourself. So here you are, you're writing, and then you go, this one's for me. And I think because of that, and you let go, right, and you let your talent flow, and you just let it just be, that's where the magic is for a writer, you know, to trust your process.
Well, it's funny, if it had happened like that, yes, that would have been awesome. Oh. But that was not what that book was like for me. I had just moved down to, so I was a a lawyer up in Boston. I worked in healthcare administration and I had a professional track there and I was known as myself there. And so I came down to Louisville with my husband with the idea that I would write for a living, that I would stop being a lawyer.
Yes.
And be able to make a living because I had had these four books come out and this, that, and the other thing. So when we got down here, I was fired by my publisher, which was the right thing to do because the books, although critically well received, were not making money. And publishing, although it's very emotional for writers, is a business for publishers, which it should be. And so I all of a sudden found myself, you know, 1,000 miles away from New England, 1,000 miles away from my friends and my family up there, with no prospects of rejoining any kind of lawyer thing because I would have to do the Kentucky bar and, you know, all that stuff. So I was terrified. When Wrath stalked me for about, you know, good, like 2 weeks. Well, it was 2 weeks. I had nothing. And then he kind of showed up and he stalked me for a number of days before he would kind of reveal what he was doing and where he was from and who he was and all that stuff. And the pictures started to happen. And I was so terrified and so upset and so dejected that I had absolutely nothing to lose. And that was the point of freedom for me. It was not a triumphal freedom. It was, I didn't have anything lower to go. So I might as well light the barn on fire. Like, no one's ever going to buy this book anyway. I just have to do it for myself because I had tried to follow the rules of romance and it didn't work. So I said, whatever I'm shown, wherever the book goes, I will follow. But again, it was from a total less than zero desperation, nothing to lose kind of thing. And that was that strife was what was required because I'm a very disciplined, rule following kind of person as in my nature, you know? And so that was that constellation of failure was what was required to pop the top and kind of free me. But I remember being terrified at the time.
You think it's that energy that really crackled on the page? Like, I feel that when I'm terror, you know, you really, well, hopefully you get those elements where you, the story crackles and pops and,
Well, and the other thing is I'm very grateful for that experience because I think failure is really important in people's lives. I think people have to fail because you do not know your own strength until life tests it.
That is so true.
And confidence is theory. Competence is real. And you don't know how competent you are until you go through that ring of fire and come out the other side, you know? And I'm like, I did it. But what the reason why it was such a gift for me was because every single time I write a book, even after all these years, I'm still terrified it's all going to be over. I'm still petrified tomorrow I'm going to wake up and my books won't sell. And as a result, I don't take any reader ever for granted. And like, you know, I when we had Readers on the River here 2 weeks ago here in Louisville, I signed for 10 hours straight because I promised readers who showed up that I would sign anything they brought to me, any books, any merchandise, any pictures. We just had no idea that the response was going to be as great as it happened to be. But I was not leaving. My team and I stayed there for 10 hours straight without eating or drinking because we were like, these are our readers. We love them. They showed up. We will not fail them. And I think if I had not had that experience of the dream being taken away from me right out of the gate, I don't know that I would have retained that visceral commitment to the books and to the readers that I have now. I don't know. It's kind of how I believe, though.
I completely understand. I mean, it makes so much sense that you really appreciate everything. But I want to put it into perspective, just how many people came out to see you, because lines to meet you are usually, people are usually lining up like the morning and you're turning up in late afternoon. So how many books did you sign? Do you remember?
We signed approximately 6,000 books and pieces of merchandise. So bags and photographic frames and obviously books and e-readers and cell phone covers, wine glasses, body parts, so that they could, you know, get the signature tattooed above things. And we took about 1,800 photographs. Now, bear in mind, you know, people were allowed to come through the line multiple times. So there was like, you could bring five things up, but you could go back to the line for however many times you wanted. And it was really, it was a wonderful experience. And I was as grateful to the first person as I was to the last person, you know?
And they, you know, readers really get that and they really appreciate that. And, you know, especially when they connect with your work on this level, they, you know, that means everything to them. What's it like whenever your fans gets a tattoo with a character, with something you've written or a symbol of one of your characters that you've created? What's that feel like?
Well, it's very surreal to me because I, and you know this because you're a writer. When you sit and you actually are in front of your monitor with your keyboard and you're typing, it's a very solitary pursuit. And that is the 90% of my life is spent by myself in my boxer shorts, in my pink bathrobe, in at my desk with my dog. And I'm really happiest there in many ways.
Yeah.
So to pop my head up and recognize that other people are as in love with these people as I am is just absolutely surreal. And I'm very, very grateful for it. And I know this sounds weird, but like, I don't really understand how I was lucky enough to be one of the people that has this kind of following. I just feel really fortunate because there are lots of writers out there who are better than I am, who don't have this response because for whatever reason, whatever comes out of their mind, you know, their brain, you know, gets it on paper, you know, publisher's report, whatever. I don't understand why I was one of the lucky ones, especially in this market. Challenging.
When I'm reading your work, it's like I'm inside the book. It's like I'm with the characters. There's no more writing. You know, they say, what is it they say? Good writing is hard writing, or that it's, you know, it's,
yeah, yeah.
I feel like I'm in a multi-dimensional world and I'm watching your characters. Like they might see me at any minute, dropping, and then it's going to be embarrassing, but that's why, you know, that, so I completely get it. You know, you write something that you feel like you're inside of this incredible world. It's really compelling, you know, so. That's why. What is the most emotional book you've ever written? If you could talk about all the books. Well, I mean, there may be a few. Is there one that's very emotional for you?
Probably Lover Awakened. I think Zeta's book will always be... there are parts of that book that I can't reread. I could barely edit them, right, to be honest with you. I mean, I can remember when I edited the manuscript and then it came back from copy edits and I was like, I don't know if I have the energy to go through all this stuff again. I mean, I did it, of course. To this day, that's one book that I don't like to reread my books because all I do is just see all the mistakes in them. But, you know, for research, I have obviously my research assistant, he goes through a lot of the stuff and I also go back into books and look at scenes. But I can't crack the cover of Lover Awakened. It's just too upsetting. Yeah, I can't do it. I don't even like to. It's my favorite book with my favorite hero. I mean, because I've written, I think, like 35 books now, or I don't know. I can't remember the number anymore, but it's still my favorite book and still the one I refuse to reread.
Yes, that's amazing. And your research assistant, does he go off? Did he go off and sample bourbon? Can I?
he's actually Scottish. And he lives in Scotland, and we call him the retriever because he, you know, if I ask him a question like, did John know that Murder and Hex had been together, and like, what exactly did he know and when did he find out, you know, because I'm drafting The Savior, which is Murder's book right now. And so he'll disappear into this hole for like 3 days and he'll come back out. I got it. And he's edited all of my books. And by edit, I mean edit. Like, he gets in there and pokes around and figures out questions. And he is a master at, continuity issues. And even then, we still have missed them. I mean, we've still missed, but considering the number of continuity things he's caught, it's a miracle, you know?
Yeah. It was good to have, gosh, it's like J.K. Rowling had, this, I think, the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
17 books in the, right? Is that correct? 17 in the Black?
I think we're up to 17 on the Black Dagger Brotherhood. I believe so, including short stories, but I haven't done the math, so I'm not sure.
And I heard a rumor that they're still going. Like, you still, it's an open-ended series, right?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the challenges, and something I have to do better at, is now that the world is so enormous, I have to, the books have gotten a bit sprawly, and I don't like it. So I'm kind of like, especially with Murder's book, which comes out April of next year, it's called The Savior, I'm kind of training it a little bit more tightly, not to the detriment of world building and all, but there's so many original brothers that I want to give updates on, but there's just not enough room if I want to keep the story tight on the hero and the heroine. And so figuring out where that balance is, because one of the great things that one of the things that readers come to me and say is wonderful is that they get to see their favorite brothers once again. And so I don't want to ever cheat them out of, oh, look, you know, there's Rage walking around and doing Rage things. I want to make sure that I just strike the right balance with them. But yeah, no, it's ongoing. And, you know, we have the BDB training center books, the Legacy series, that is also ongoing. And so, yeah, there's a lot still left to explore in the world.
You've got a lot of characters in your head. I don't know how you do it. And then you actually have a new series out. The first book is called Consumed. And the heroine is Anne Ashbourne, who's a firefighter and then a fire investigator. Tell me a little bit about her and your new series.
Well, so I've had in the back of my mind the idea of doing a first responder series for quite some time now. And the reason why is because I look at first responders as sort of the human equivalent to the Black Dagger Brotherhood. You know, whether you're talking about firemen or SWAT guys or paramedics or emergency room people, they're all part of this, they're part of a unit that works to save people and help people. And Anne showed up in my head, and she's a pretty tough cookie. And I know that some of the readers have found her tough, you know, but I think she softens by the end of the book, not out of character softened, but I think she kind of becomes more comfortable with her and her past so that she can reveal other sides to her personality versus always, you know, just really just tough, which you have to be if you're a female firefighter and if you come from the kind of family background that she does. But she's strong-willed, strong-minded, and when a tragedy strikes for which she feels responsible for, she has to reroute her entire life and find a new way of participating in the fire prevention, firefighting kind of world. And I think that it brings up a really interesting question for me just as a human being and as an author. You know, I think there are eras to people's lives and we're not aware of them when we're in them. Okay, so it's like when you have kids, you know, you've got the mom aspect to you, or when you first get married, you've got the newlywed thing, or, you know, if a tragedy strikes, you become another version of yourself. And I think that throughout our lives, accommodating these changes in circumstance and how they enrich us and help us grow, even if some are incredibly painful and unpleasant, it's part of the human condition. And I think everyone can relate to it. Everyone can relate to it.
Definitely. Definitely. And I mean, that's very profound, the fact that you're not really aware that you're in it. You're just enduring it and you're just experiencing it and growing, hopefully, from that experience. So do you have anything about yourself that your readers don't know about that you'd be willing to share with us? Anything that would surprise us?
Well, the truth is, and I always fail at questions like this, and I don't want this to come across badly. I'm not interesting. Like, the books are interesting. The characters are interesting. Their lives are interesting. My life. Well, I'm sorry?
I was going to say, I kind of relate, because although I don't, I would say you are very interesting and you're very compelling and I love chatting with you. I get it, because when I'm at parties or when I'm out socially, I'm like, oh, I've got nothing to offer other than the stories.
Yep, that's right.
I'm just going to just hang out here and listen to people and study people and be with people, but I really have nothing much to say. But when you're writing, that's when all of that comes out. I do get that. I do get why you would say that. But I think if you were at a cocktail party, I'd be wanting to hang out with you.
Oh, well, you're very gracious. But I mean, I think that that's part of, I think that's sort of kind of a writer thing. You know, and when people, I'm very fortunate that readers and authors, come up to me and they want to know, like, how do I do what I do? And, and I'm just like, I don't want to turn people off to writing, but I literally 7 days a week, I wake up at the same time every morning and I sit down at my desk first thing every morning and I write until noon every single day and I run and then I sometimes have a nap and then I go back to writing. I mean, it's a very,
it's who you are. It's what you are. It's who you are. Yeah. Writing is like breathing, right? It sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not like the sexy, like, oh, in my spare time, I jump out of airplanes, I'm a gourmet chef, and I play classical guitar. It's like, no, I don't have any B plans. This is all I got,
I know, I'm like, if you ever made a documentary, I'd be just sitting there in my dressing gown, just
talking. Yeah, right.
It's like, you don't have to fill my dog in for any excitement, and then it's back to typing.
That is exactly right.
Oh, my gosh. So who do you like to read? Who are your favorite authors?
So I have failed as a reader for the past 17 years. I have on occasion read books that, for friends or because my publisher has asked me, to give blurbs, because I will not blurb anything unless I've read the book and honestly love it. But I recently listened to Stephen King's On Writing Again. After, I think it came out, 10 or 15 years ago. And I listened to it over the summer again. And the reason why I did is because my mentor, Sue Grafton, died last December. And I was unaware of the incredible influence she had on me as a writer and a business person and a woman. And I was unaware of what kind of a resource and support she was to me, because she'd kick your butt. I mean, like, Sue looked like a little tiny grandmother, but she was tough as nails and she would tell you right where it was at, which is why part of the reason why I loved her. So I found myself sort of at a crossroads in my new publisher, and I really wanted to be able to run these things by her. So I got Stephen King's On Writing Again. And because the two of them share a lot of the same philosophies about, the work comes first, and both of them read extensively. They read other fiction authors extensively. And I don't want to speak for either of them, but I believe they would say, you can't be in this business unless you, read and think about how other people do the job. So I had always been a big Stephen King fan. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, which is maybe one of the reasons why I ended up writing about vampires. So I got The Shining, which I had seen the movie, but I hadn't actually read The Shining, but I'd read like Night Shift and Salem's Lot and Pet Sematary and you know, all the books that he read. And I just fell into a Stephen King hole yet again. And some of his more recent books, including the one about the JFK assassination and, you know, the time travel book that he did. And he's just amazing. His style is obviously very different. And I would never compare myself to him because he's a master. But so I'm a huge fan of Stephen King. Kristen Ashley, Rock Chick, I picked that up and fell in the hole. I don't even like first person books. They freak me out. It's too close. I don't want to be. I love her voice. Jennifer Armentrout, just think she's, and Jennifer Armentrout is a spectacular human being as well. MJ Rose, Tiffany Blue. So I just started reading again, like in the last like 6 months, and it's been awesome.
Fantastic. That's great. I actually have a group on Facebook called The Romance Lounge, and I told everyone I was going to be chatting with you today, and everybody responded by saying you're their favorite author, and I offered them they were just so excited, and I've offered them the chance to ask you a question. So we have time for one question.
Please.
From Cassandra. Yeah. And she said, did you love reading paranormal stories before you started writing them?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, 100%. And that goes back to the Stephen King thing. I love being scared. You know, as long as I'm safe while I'm being scared, you know. But I read him, and I read Poppy Zebright, who's a horror author, and you know, some thrillers that were really great. And so, yeah, I absolutely read about vampires and, you know, Bram Stoker and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So absolutely. And I think that that's part of, like, I also read a lot of romance. And so I think that it was the nexus of my love for romance and my affection for horror, and that kind of, you know, came together in the Black Dagger Brotherhood.
Right. So, great answer. Thank you. Cassandra's going to be thrilled. And we're all thrilled that you are writing these amazing books. Do you have a message for your fans? I know that you absolutely adore them and you would not sleep for 48 hours if it meant you'd met everyone. But is there something you want to say to them on the road?
Well, I mean, other than, you know, thank you for all your support. You know, the readers who put down their hard-earned money from my books are the reason why I can do what I love for a living. I would still write, but I would have to have a real job, you know? Well, this is a real job. So I'm just very, very grateful. And I really also want to encourage people to get excited for the Savior, because, you know, with murder coming back, we're getting back to basics, the old school BDB books that I think people will really, really love the Savior. So, and thank you, Vanessa, for having me.
I'm so thrilled that you could have joined me. I'm so incredibly grateful. You're an incredibly busy lady, and I'm honored that you've been on The Romance Show. So guys, go out and buy Consumed, and please, please, please pick up The Bourbon Kings too, because I'm in love with this series and I need to talk to you about it, share these feelings with you. So thank you so much for joining me today, J.R. Ward.
Thank you so much, Vanessa. I'm very grateful. And hi to everyone.
Thank you again to J.R. Ward for joining us here on The Romance Show. We're part of Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'd like to say a shout out to my producer, Pam Stagg. Remember to subscribe to us on iTunes. Thank you to everyone who's sharing news about our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can find me on Facebook. And you can also subscribe to my newsletter. The other news we have is my book cover is being revealed for Perfume Girl in about 2 weeks. So join us in the Romance Lounge on Facebook if you want to be one of the first people to see that. Super excited about that cover. Once again, thank you for listening to The Romance Show. I'm your host, Vanessa Fewings. Keep your books open and your hearts full. Bye. Thank you.